This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In more than 30 churches around the country yesterday, religious leaders brought partisan politics into the pulpit. All of them talked about hot-button issues. Some left little doubt as to their presidential preferences, and many endorsed a presidential candidate outright. The action was coordinated by a conservative Christian group called Alliance Defense Fund as a challenge to the Internal Revenue Service and the law that prohibits tax-exempt organizations from engaging in partisan politics. They hope their case eventually makes it to the Supreme Court. The pastors argue they don't lose their First Amendment right to free speech when they step inside their churches. Critics argue that crosses the line between church and state and ought to cost them their tax-exempt status. We'll talk with two pastors, one who endorsed Senator John McCain yesterday and one who thinks partisan politics have no place in the pulpit. Later, Ted Koppel joins us to talk about what the candidates said Friday night about foreign policy and what they didn't say. But first, pulpit politics. What happens in your place of worship? Do you want your spiritual leader to endorse candidates and urge you to vote the same way? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. And we begin in the small rural community of War Road, Minnesota. There, Gus Booth is the pastor of the War Road Community Church. He joins us now on the phone from his home. And nice to have you on the line.
Hello, Neil. It's good to be here.
And I wonder if you would read us a short excerpt of your homily yesterday.
Well, I don't know that I could read one. I'm not in a position where I have it. But basically, what I encourage my congregation to do is to vote for John McCain because he is the most biblically accurate candidate that has a chance of winning this November.
And obviously, an endorsement, some people would say you crossed a line.
The IRS would have that opinion, that's for sure, but I would essentially say that the First Amendment gives me the right to say whatever I want to say. The IRS shouldn't be in the business of censoring the pulpits of the United States.
Oh, they don't want to censor what you have to say. They're just concerned about your tax-exempt status. If you want to say that, at least according to the law, then you're not tax-exempt anymore.
Well, churches are by nature not taxable, so we don't have to be a 501c3 in order to not be taxed. And the Constitution gives us the freedom of speech rights before the IRS even existed, for goodness sake. So that's how I would rebut that, I guess.
Well, the one thing that might hurt a little, I suppose, is donations to your church, as it stands, are now tax-deductible, and if you lost that status, they wouldn't be.
Apparently, that's what some would argue, but we would argue we are not taxable. It's not that we're just a tax-exempt organization. We are not taxable. Because we are a not-for-profit organization, we're certainly not a political action committee. And that's an interesting point, that most political action committees, they are tax-exempt, and they can talk about politics. Why can't churches?
Well, it's an argument you're going to have to take up, I guess, in court, which is the point. And I assume you would also defend the right of anybody who felt differently than you do to endorse Senator Obama from their pulpit.
Absolutely. Your assumption is correct.
4 years ago, I think that the issues you're most concerned with were probably just as stark in the choice between President Bush and John Kerry. Did you make an endorsement 4 years ago?
I don't remember if I did or not. I think I probably crossed the line, but the difference between 4 years ago and today is that I alerted the IRS to my infraction.
So you're inviting some sort of action?
Yes.
And you did this in concert with a group of other people, presumably to make the action so large that the IRS couldn't ignore it.
Well, I did it by myself way back in May 18th, but then I essentially redid it and preached a different message, but I crossed the line, according to the IRS, just yesterday.
And some would argue that in so doing, you changed from being a spiritual organization, a church, into becoming a political organization.
Well, we do way more church things than we do political things, but I don't separate the two. I believe that the gospel should be in all areas of life, in business, in politics. It doesn't matter what it is. So they're not mutually exclusive. The scripture is very clear about us taking the gospel into every area.
And so you think that this, the law is wrong, and this is a nonviolent protest?
Absolutely.
Well, let's see if we can get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Roberto. Roberto's with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Hello?
Hi, Roberto. You're on the air.
Yes. I believe that a minister, priest, whomever, should be able to endorse somebody. I mean, they're not holding any kind of government position to begin with. And there is freedom of speech. And, you know, if this candidate conforms to your beliefs, then you should be able to endorse that person. This is like insider trading for stocks, which is a ridiculous law, you know. It's you should be able to speak your piece. I mean, you don't hold a public office. It's not like you're elected by the mass of people in your city or community, so you should be able to.
You're saying that if you have insider information about a stock, you should be able to act on that too?
Sure. That would keep everybody honest. If you found out something, if you found out something about your stock, you know, inadvertently, wouldn't you dump it before you lost all your money? I mean, what do they expect you to do? Just sit there and take the loss? Just like, you know, when you're up in that pulpit, you've got a way to say, hey, look, this guy or girl or whomever's running, they are more like we should be, and they can do good things.
Well, I'm just,
you know, that's a minister.
Okay, thanks very much for the phone call. And Gus Booth, I don't know if you endorse the part about insider trading, but at least on the other part, he agrees with you.
I never thought of it that way, but I appreciate the support.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Aaron. Aaron with us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I feel that I think I could understand both sides of the argument here in some respects. I think that the church should have a freedom to say what they feel, and their congregation may not have to agree with them necessarily, but they should be able to express whether or not they endorse a candidate. However, I don't feel that they should be tax-exempt, even if this is an issue or not. I think something like a giant church like the Catholic Church, you know, brings in so much revenue every year. Things like that could be taxed could be used to help out with a lot of problems in this country, I feel.
Well, I think a lot of churches would argue that they use a lot of the income that comes in to help people already. They run schools. They have charities of their own.
Schools, true. But, I mean, how much do these schools cost? I mean, private schools nowadays cost just as much as colleges do many times. I mean, that money has to be going somewhere.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Aaron.
Thank you.
And let me ask you, Gus Booth, some people would say that there is a dividing line between the worldly part of our lives and the other part of our lives when we go to church on Sunday or to synagogue on Saturday or go to our mosques on Friday, that there ought to be a dividing line between the spiritual part of our lives and the worldly part.
Well, that to me breeds hypocrisy. I mean, Christ wants to get into every part of our life, and if we can somehow convince ourselves that he is not part of our political process or not part of our, you know, what we do in our bedroom or not part of, you know, some sinister thing, then we are fooling ourselves thinking that we are somehow Christians when we don't let him into every area of our life.
Let's get another caller in. This is Kevin. Kevin with us from Bend, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi, Ken. Kevin, go ahead.
Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, I just have to say, as far as the laws of our nation are concerned, be with that what it may, and the tax-exempt status and everything, but I believe that when Christ, going back to the Bible, when the Roman rule was brought up before Jesus, and they asked him about it, and it was a decidedly un-Christian rule at the time, and he told him, he said, you know what, you let that take care of itself, and you take care of yourself. And so to go out and endorse one party or the other, I believe is mixing something that shouldn't be mixed.
What about the argument of freedom of speech that we've heard from Pastor Booth?
I believe you are free, and I believe that every U.S. citizen should be involved in their government. But to put a religious tag on one party or the other or one candidate or the other is mixing church and state, which our government is founded again.
Gus Booth, I wonder if you had a response.
Well, if you're a believer in the separation of church and state, I think you ought to be on my side because the state is essentially trying to tell me what I can and can't say in my church.
Kevin?
Yes, yes. And And I believe you're mixing church and state when you preach about politics from the pulpit.
And I believe they are mixing church and state when they're telling me what I can and can't say in my own church.
Again, they're not telling you what you can or can't say. They're just telling you about your tax status.
Well, no. In essence, they're wanting me to pay for freedom of speech. And I don't think freedom of speech should cost anybody anything.
Don't you get certain privileges as a religious institution, among them a tax-exempt status? And part of the rules for that tax-exempt status is that you don't engage in partisan politics. And you're suggesting,
That was the rule that started in 1954, and up until that time, we had hundreds of years, or at least 100 and some years, of non-taxing churches. And we as a church, I mean, we do so much more than becoming involved in political, you know, campaigns. As a church, we're not. I'm just wanting to say what it is God is wanting me to say, or at least I believe what God is wanting me to say from behind the pulpit. We can debate in the church whether or not, you know, churches should be involved in politics or not, but that's not a debate that the IRS needs to get involved with.
Do you feel comfortable, and by the way, Kevin, thanks very much for the call, do you feel comfortable that some parishioners might come away saying, well, it's not just a Pastor Booth's endorsement, that's God's endorsement?
Well, God is not even an American, for goodness sake. He's neither a Republican or a Democrat, but the Democratic platform has more biblical principles in it than the Republican platform has more biblical principles in it than the Democratic platform. So I associate the platform with certain areas of Scripture. Matter of fact, some of the wording of the platform is taken from Scripture.
Gus Moore, thanks very much for your time today, and we appreciate it.
You're welcome, brother.
Gus Booth is the pastor of the War Road Community Church in War Road, Minnesota. Yesterday, in his sermon in his church, he endorsed John McCain, the Republican candidate for president. Of course, he said also on this broadcast that if somebody were to endorse Senator Obama or any of the other presidential candidates from the pulpit, he'd be happy with that, too. When we come back, we'll talk with the pastor who argues politics has no place in the pulpit. Stay with us or give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Updating today's top story, the House of Representatives defeated the $700 billion bailout bill earlier today. Despite intense pressure from the White House and leaders in Congress, the bill fell more than 20 votes short. More than two-thirds of Republicans and 40% of Democrats voted against. A senior House aide told Reuters the members will abandon their previous plan to recess for the campaign so they can work on the bailout bill. Stay with NPR News throughout the day for the latest on the bailout proposal, and of course we'll break in and update you as news warrants. At the moment, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 636 points. But for now, back to our conversation about politics and the pulpit. The IRS bars nonprofit tax groups from partisan politicking. Yesterday, dozens of religious leaders defied that law, including Pastor Gus Booth, whom we just talked to. What happens in your place of worship? Do you want your spiritual leader to endorse candidates and urge you to vote that way, too? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Joining us now is the Reverend Welton Gaddy. He's the pastor of Northminster Church in Monroe, Louisiana, and joins us from a studio there. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks, Neil. Glad to be here.
And I know you disagree with the action Pastor Booth and a whole bunch of other people took yesterday. Why?
I do. It is a very short-sighted action based on a false premise that will lead to the dangerous consequences of dividing religion in this nation as we've never seen it divided before, and also hurting the credibility of religious integrity.
How would that happen?
Well, false premise, there is freedom of speech for anybody in this nation, whether they are a leader of a house of worship or not. The government will protect that. But freedom of speech does not mean that you can usurp the responsibility of being a leader of a house of worship and still benefit from tax exemptions made for houses of worship. When you begin to act like a political caucus, then you get taxed like a political caucus. The dangerous consequences have to do with the implication that the prior guest elaborated, really, and that is the suggestion that God is taking sides in a partisan political election, and that God has told someone what that person ought to say as a leader of a house of worship and try to persuade other people to follow.
It might elevate a political dispute into a holy war.
Well, and it's a very theocratic idea, and those holding it have visions of being theo.
Nevertheless, the specific endorsement by dozens of ministers in various churches around the country yesterday aside, churches have long been involved in politics and taken strong stances on a lot of political issues.
Absolutely. And I know as you went off on the first segment, you suggested that I was not for the church being involved in political activities. That's not the case.
I apologize for misrepresenting.
It's okay. I understand. My position is the church ought not be involved in partisan political activities. The issues, and on this I would agree with the former guest, and that is that the issues that you deal with in houses of worship as in other places are social and today almost invariably political as well as moral. A house of worship and its leader have a responsibility to help individuals understand the pressing issues of the day from the perspective of the theology of your tradition and from the morality that you find in your scriptures. You have a responsibility to do that, but that stops short of telling people who God best thinks or who you best think can facilitate the application of those moral principles. Yes, deal with political issues. No, don't deal with political personalities.
So you would be comfortable with the longstanding argument of the Catholic Church that, for example, and they're certainly not alone in this position, but that abortion is a terrible thing and that they would be free to preach against abortion and indeed to urge their parishioners to vote against candidates who support abortion.
I would feel most comfortable if the Catholic Church, like any other church, wanted to preach against abortion, if they did preach against abortion, and then, which is in the true spirit of real religion, leave those worshipers free to make the application and to make a decision for whom they would vote. It's very dangerous business when the leader of a house of worship assumes to know, it's arrogant to assume to know the mind of God and the mind of another person enough to tell that person for whom to vote. And I don't know what happens. I said one of the unintended, maybe unintended consequences of this protest, if it were successful, would be the divides in religion in this nation that would occur. But can you imagine, I pastor a church in the free church tradition. That means the congregation makes the decision. It's not a hierarchical situation. At a business meeting, can you imagine a congregation trying to decide for what candidate they would devote themselves for an endorsement? It would divide a congregation if a congregation has the kind of diversity it should. No, religion and freedom are best friends. And the reason that freedom of religion needs to be protected in this nation is because this nation is spiritually vibrant because there's been that freedom. If you abridge that and you start manipulating the pulpit for partisan political purposes, you risk the very foundation of what's made religion vibrant in this nation.
I have an update from Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR's religion correspondent, correcting me on something that I said earlier, or something else that I said earlier. It is somewhat uncharted territory, she writes, for religious groups to challenge the tax code on issues of partisan politics. It's not clear what the repercussions could be. Likely that organization would lose their tax-exempt status temporarily. That means they are no longer exempt from paying sales tax. Contributions from parishioners would continue to be tax-deductible for those members. Under the tax code, the nonprofit could also be fined 10% of the costs for preparing and presenting that sermon, essentially a symbolic move. If yesterday's protest does end up in the courts, it could answer many of those questions. And, of course, that remains to be seen. Let's get someone else in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Neil is on the line. Neil calling us from Hastings in Florida.
Yes, sir. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
You know, I kind of agree to some respect with your last caller. I really believe that priests and deacons should be allowed to speak specifically on issues and candidates with the same moral and spiritual beliefs as what our Catholic Church teaches. Far too many times near election time, a priest says, well, you know, I'd really like to get specific on this and names names, but it'll threaten our tax-exempt status. But, you know, he kind of did what Jesus did. He always made these analogies about what was going on, which are clear to follow. And, in fact, I have a little letter from the St. Augustine Diocesan Center for Family Life that it suggests that we make a real difference on abortion. But they say the choice between McCain and Obama could not be more stark and simple. But they said, please help educate people to what their beliefs are. See, that's one way they do it. Another is make a real difference on marriage. Amendment 2 on the Florida ballot proposes to define marriage as only between one man and one woman. It says, I urge you not only to vote yes, but to urge every Floridian you do so. So I do know that there's Father Carapi. He's a traveling Catholic spiritual preacher. He pays taxes so that when he gets up and preaches, he can say specifically and exactly who he's talking about and what that relates to the moral teachings of the Catholic Church. I believe that's the right way to do it.
And, Neil, you're not concerned about what Reverend Gatti was talking about just a moment ago, that this could lead people to say, well, you know, this is not a political dispute. It's a religious dispute, and wars have been fought about religious disputes.
Yeah, that's true to some extent, but I believe in our everyday life, we go to church to teach us how to act as a spiritual and moral human being. And if we feel that there is someone who's not acting to the high standards that we believe Jesus would do, we have to name that. I wouldn't
Neil,
say we would go to war for God.
Yeah.
May I ask a question of the caller?
Please go ahead, Reverend Gatti.
If your priest told you to vote for someone that you thought was not the appropriate candidate, would you feel obligated to follow the priest or to follow your own conscience?
I would be following my own conscience, regardless of what he said, although if it conflicts with Catholic teaching, then I would have to pray hard on the issue. But I'm not just going to follow someone because they think this candidate would make a better candidate.
And that is precisely the point, sir. That is precisely the point. There are different kinds of authority. Mm. There's religious authority, and there's political authority.
Exactly.
And I would stand with you in total support in defending a priest in the Catholic Church or a minister anywhere else interpreting an issue from the perspective of your scriptures and your church's tradition and staying with that. But when that person steps out of that scriptural and church tradition to endorse a candidate for public office, the person assumes a political authority that is not given to religious leaders and begins to tell people a personal opinion from behind a sacred desk or a communion mass that ought to remain sacred, not opinionated and secular.
Well, when a candidate is definitely for or against and one of the planks in their platform is markedly against what we teach as moral law, the sanctity of human life. If a candidate allows life to be snatched from the womb, then obviously one has to speak out against this travesty.
No, but you don't have to speak against the candidate. You speak against the moral principle, and you assume that God has placed in front of you people capable of having moral sensitivities themselves and making their own decision on the basis of what you have done as a religious leader to interpret the scriptures.
Neil, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, too.
So long. Here's an email from Sam. While I support neither Barack Obama nor John McCain, I definitely support the right of churches and pastors to say whatever they want. I also strongly believe that God belongs in every area of one's life. As far as separation of church and state is concerned, the phrase is not found in the Constitution, and I don't believe any of the founders thought that way. I know that in my church, the pastor refuses to talk politics, and that bothers me. Even if he endorsed a candidate I didn't agree with, that would be better in my mind than refusing to stand up for what he believed. The IRS has no business interfering with the church, and the church has no business compromising their message because of C3 status. And this from Rosa in Corte Madera, California. The problem with the church taking a political position is that the political parties will tailor their stances and policy based on what these factions want to hear as they deliver votes. This could and has led to politicians to ignore the constitutional mandate of separating church and state. I'm the daughter of a Pentecostal minister and most definitely would not want the beliefs of the church I was raised in or any other dictating public policy. That would be unfair and ultimately a detriment to democracy. We're talking about the politics and the pulpit. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Deborah on the line. Deborah's calling us from Columbus in Ohio.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead, please.
I just wanted to say that I pretty much will agree with your first person that just sent you an email. My pastor does not give political statements one way or the other. However, I, as a Christian, feel that he should. I feel that he should not only just teach biblical principles, but that he should apply those to our everyday life, because my faith, the Christian faith, as I read the Bible, is to be part of all aspects of my life. I think when you tell a pastor he can't say which person he would endorse, you're saying to a whole bunch of people in the congregation that you're not smart enough to listen to the pastor and then make a decision on your own, what you interpret the Bible to say yourself. I think that a pastor should have that right. I really don't think the government should have anything to say. Separation of state and church is not part of our Constitution. It's something that Thomas Jefferson wrote afterwards to protect the church from the government, not to protect the government from the church.
Reverend Gaddy, this is the second person who's raised that issue of the separation of church and state, not in the Constitution.
The words are not in the Constitution. The principle is in the Constitution, and it is due to the revisionist historical actions of people like David Barton that you're hearing these words about disdaining separation of church and state. The very principle that's being enunciated by those who say there should not be any separation between the institutions of religion and the institutions of government, it comes from a majoritarian point of view. If you want to know what it looks like from the other side, look at the Iranian government and think how you would like to be a Christian in that situation.
Our government allows every religion to practice its religion as long as it is within the laws of not harming other people. So I think that you're making an inaccurate correlation there, because the Iranian government, being an Islamic government, does not allow any other religion to practice their belief system, whereas ours does allow for freedom of religion and any religion.
Well, I don't want to get into a debate over what happens in Iran. That's not an accurate statement.
You brought that up, not I.
No, I know, but you can't. It's an inaccurate statement. In the Iranian government, our government has spent the lives of thousands of our citizens establishing the Islamic Republic of Iraq. In that republic, like in Iran, Christians can exist. They don't have many rights, but they can exist. When you adopt a majoritarian point of view regarding the leadership of government, you shut the door to freedom. I don't want to do that. I want a nation in which
Islamic leaders could also, from their, I don't believe it's called a pulpit, but from their churches could also endorse candidates, as could Hindu leaders or Assyrian leaders. I believe that every person who has a religious position of leadership has the right and the responsibility to let their congregation know, based on what they believe that their holy scripture says, who they would vote for.
Deborah, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. I just wanted to get a couple more emails in before we had to run. This from Nanette in Tucson, Arizona. I go to the oldest African-American church in Tucson, Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church. 8 years ago, my pastor told us one Sunday morning that God has sent us one of our own. This was in reference to candidate George Bush. I was so upset. I've only returned to the church occasionally because, one, I'm a Democrat, and two, I don't believe pastors should use the pulpit for politics. And now my belief in God has wavered some, because what kind of messenger is that for him to have to send to us? And this from Ann in Arizona. The role of the church is to provide spiritual support for its people. It has no place in state affairs. As a member of secular society, I don't want the church involved in public life. This is not a question about public, about freedom of speech. It's a question about separation of church and state. And we're going to have to end it there. But Reverend Gaddy, thank you so much for your time today.
Listen, thanks for dealing with this subject.
Reverend Welton Gaddy is the pastor of the North Minster Church in Monroe, Louisiana, and joined us from a studio there in Monroe. Coming up after the break, we'll talk with Ted Koppel about what the candidate said and didn't say about foreign policy Friday night. Talk of the Nation, NPR News.